This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
You have problems that have quite compounded to a point where now you have multiple inquiries demonstrating the weakness within the ANC. You have got the party that is not well aligned to actually deal with decisively with the scourge of corruption.
That was South African political analyst Dr. Ralph Matiga on the impact of corruption allegations on the ruling African National Congress. Details coming up. Also, because of the military coup in Guinea, ECOWAS is demanding a return to constitutional order. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Africa's oldest former liberation movement, South Africa's ruling African National Congress, appears to be in crisis ahead of local government elections next month. The ANC has put faith in a court agreeing to its application to postpone the polls to elect political leaders in towns and cities until next year, but the judges dismissed it. Political analysts say the governing party is now in a serious danger of losing cities to opposition parties. Darren Taylor has more.
The ANC remains on the rack in the court of public opinion, where it's judged to still be allowing high-level corruption to flourish. Citizens also remain angered by the response of President Cyril Ramaphosa's administration to the public violence which erupted in several cities in July. Political analyst and author of several books about the party, Dr. Ralph Matiga, has predicted that the ANC will lose power before the decade's out.
You have problems that have quite compounded to a point where now you have multiple inquiries demonstrating the weakness within the ANC. You have got the party that is not well aligned to actually deal with decisively with the scourge of corruption.
He points out that many of those in the ANC tasked with fighting graft are themselves implicated in financial crimes. With about 6 weeks to go before the election, the ANC doesn't know who its candidates are in many municipalities. Professor Ivor Sarakinski of the Wits University School of Governance says this chaos shows how much the party's decayed since it became South Africa's first democratically elected government in 1994.
You end up in a situation where large numbers of ANC votes aren't in the system. And that means that in those municipalities, the ANC could be significantly weakened as a result of low voter turnout. The ANC should be really, really worried about this, and it should be a wake-up call.
Matiga says the party's always relied on money from secret sources, but new legislations hampering its efforts to fund campaigns.
The ANC is also going into a very unfamiliar electoral environment whereby we now have transparency regarding party finance. That means anyone who wants to finance the party now knows that their name will be known according to the new law. So all of these things are making it very difficult for the party to hang on. The ANC is barely hanging in the key metros in this country.
The party's branches are also riven by infighting, with members battling to be on ANC lists that could give them access to lucrative jobs. Sarakinski says the ANC's made a habit of appointing city officials based not on their skills and competence, but on their influence in the party.
If it appoints the wrong people as candidates, those who thought they should have got the job will break away and set themselves up in other structures. That's a sign of a dynamic, evolving political system, and I can't think of anything bad to say about it.
The ANC lost power long ago to the Democratic Alliance in Cape Town. Once the party loses other big cities, such as Johannesburg and Pretoria, says Matiga, it'll set off a snowball effect, and the ANC will lose municipalities across South Africa.
They've been losing 3% election on election. Now the branches are divided because leaders are tearing each other apart. The party cannot even offer a coherent campaign platform. But it does not matter very much the date that they slip below that 51%. The ANC is no longer hegemonic as we speak. I mean,
he's convinced the ANC is doomed to become a party that's popular in a few provinces and cities, but no longer strong enough to govern the whole country. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, will hold an extraordinary summit on Guinea on Thursday, according to a staff memo shared with Reuters. Special forces on Sunday ousted long-serving President Alpha Conde and dissolved his cabinet. ECOWAS is demanding a return to constitutional order and threatens to impose sanctions. Russia, which is closely following the situation in Guinea, is hoping the military coup will not hurt Russian business interests in the African country. International organizations such as the United Nations, the African Union, ECOWAS, and some governments have condemned the coup and demanded Conde's release. Reports indicate that Guinea, so far, is generally peaceful. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, almost all medical workers have been on strike for nearly a month. In a country that has battled outbreaks of measles, Ebola, and COVID-19, the strike is creating a health care crisis. Journalist Jafar Alkatanti in Goma speaks with my colleague Kate Pond-Dawson about the situation.
All caregivers, except doctors, all of them are in strike since 1 month now. Nurses, administrators, hygienists, pharmacists, dentists, and psychologists, everybody working in the health system in DRC are in strike except doctors.
What are their demands? Why are they taking such a drastic job action?
They say it's because of a poor treatment and especially a bad distribution of the budget allocated to health. As doctors only constitute 12% of the health system staff in DRC, but they consume more than 60% of the budget at the expense of 88% of the staff. So nurses and others touch few money than doctors. That's why they start to work until the government decides to organize the payment for them also.
What has the effect been on health care in the country, and how is the public reacting?
I talked this morning to Mr. Jean-Paul Lumbulumbu, who is a provincial MP, he's a member of parliament, who said the government have to take a decision and to consider the demands of the nursing staff, because this strike has resulted in several services being shutting down. For example, the prenatal consultation, the vaccination, and as you said, DRC has a lot of problems, polio, measles, diphtheria, so all that has stopped. Also, the COVID surveillance report is no longer prepared at time. For example, since 3 days, we don't know about COVID, how many new cases, how many new survivors, how many new deaths. So this is a problem. And when we talk with pregnant women, especially, it's a danger for them because they used to do the prenatal consultation, but since 1 month there is nothing, so no one know about her pregnancy, it's good or not.
And is there any end in sight? Is the government moving to negotiate with those who are on strike or considering making changes to the budgeting?
Not yet, but just in North Kivu, the governor himself met some chief of staff of many different hospitals, but no, there is not a solution yet.
That was Jafar Al-Kitandi, a journalist in Goma, speaking with VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson. Sudan's Interior Ministry said yesterday that more than 70 boxes of weapons that arrived by air from neighboring Ethiopia are legal cargo imported by a licensed arms trader. Earlier, according to Reuters, Sudanese authorities confiscated the weapons, saying they were destined for use in crimes against the state. It turned out that the shipment, which included 290 rifles, belonged to a licensed trader, Wail Shums Eldin, who was checked and found to be legitimate. Tensions between Sudan and Ethiopia have been running high due to a spillover of the conflict in Ethiopia's northern Tigray region and Ethiopia's construction of a giant hydro-powered dam. New data from the World Health Organization indicate Africa likely will miss the urgent global goal of vaccinating the most vulnerable 10% of every country's population against COVID-19 by the end of September. The organization says 42 out of the 54 countries would miss the target if the current pace of vaccine deliveries and vaccinations holds. Maybe Sochera in Juwaso in the Ashanti region of Ghana has more.
9 African countries, including South Africa, Morocco, and Tunisia, have reached the global target the WHO set in May. Another trend pays 3 more African countries are set to hit that mark. While many African countries have speeded up COVID-19 vaccinations as vaccine shipments ramp up in August, 26 countries have used less than half of their vaccines. Dr. Mashidiso Mwazi, World Health Organization Regional Director for Africa, says as long as vaccination rates remain low, severe illness and death from COVID-19 could stay high.
As WHO, we're working tirelessly to support countries to hit the global target of fully vaccinating 10% of their populations by the end of September. We've just 1 month to go, and this must concentrate our minds in Africa and minds globally.
Mwazi, who was speaking as part of a recent online panel, says over 143 million doses of vaccine have been received in Africa. Just 39 million people, less than 3% of population, were fully vaccinated. That compares with more than 50% of residents in Europe and the United States who are fully vaccinated. One concern is inequity in the distribution of vaccines, Mwazi said, noting that Africa accounts for just 2% of 5 billion doses given globally. Mwazi commended the commitment of local and national authorities, communities and partners working hard to expand the rollout of COVID-19 vaccines across the continent. She says some countries were moving to vaccinate everyone over 18 years of age and using retired nurses and nursing students and partnerships with the private sector to reach targeted populations. Some countries are pushing vaccination points into hard-to-reach areas.
I encourage more countries to use micro-planning to guide vaccinators on where and when to provide vaccination services, and to inform communities of how they can access these vaccines. Overall, it's clear that dose sharing arrangements need to continue to be stepped up. Longer term, African countries are putting in place systems and hubs to produce vaccines locally. But to fast-track the global recovery from this pandemic, international solidarity remains key.
Dr. Nicholas Cripps is Deputy Director General of National Health Insurance Department of Health in South Africa and spoke on the same panel. He says so far the country had administered 13 million doses of vaccines. Cripps said nearly 23% of the population has received at least a single dose, and just over 14% of all adults are fully vaccinated. He says although the country continues to encounter challenges with vaccine supply, authorities are doing their best to ensure that 70% of the population get at least one dose before the end of the year.
Part of which are outreach and making vaccines more readily accessible to people, transport improvements, pop-up sites in villages and in malls and the taxi ranks. But part of it is also about making sure that we give the right information widely across the country. We have a lot of very suspicious people. The overarching, we have installed an electronic vaccine data. It makes it possible for people to register and to be scheduled for vaccines as of yet. And so slowly but surely, we find things that will improve the vaccination rollout.
COVID-19 cases are declining slightly in Africa, but remain high as increasing numbers of new cases are reported in Central, East and West Africa, push cases numbers up to nearly 215,000 in the week ending 29th August. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Autry in Jaso in the Ashanti region of Ghana.
Algerian police have arrested 27 suspected members of a separatist group. According to the French news agency AFP, the detainees belong to the movement of the Autonomy of Kabylie, or MAC. The group seeks independence for the Berber-speaking Kabylie people. The Algerian government has labeled the group a terrorist organization. Neighboring Morocco's support for MAC was one of the reasons cited by Algeria in cutting diplomatic relations late last month. Police say the 27 were arrested for trying to spread terror and strife, resorting to assault and robbery and injuring security forces who intervened to protect citizens and their property. MAC, whose leadership is based in France, denies any involvement. As schools reopened this week in Zimbabwe, reports of COVID-19 infections already are emerging, as teachers' unions say only about 5% of instructors are vaccinated. Adigando gives us more on the story.
Nine girls at Christie Mambo Girls are High in Manicaland tested positive, and other schools around the country say they have similar problems. The development prompted some schools to demand certificates from students showing that they are free of COVID-19 before they can be admitted back to school, based on a recommendation from the health ministry. Last week, the government announced it had opened vaccinations to the 14 to 17 age group in a move targeting returning students. A survey by VOA of schools around the country reveals that their preparation for learners varies. Some have buckets outside classes for children to wash their hands, while others require parents to provide sanitizers and masks for their children. Despite the earlier promises of government funds for COVID-19 protection measures, teachers' unions claim little has been done. Parents say the haphazard efforts are endangering their children's health and lives. Patience Moyo, a mother of two primary school kids in Blawaya, says that other than giving directives, the government has all but abandoned its responsibility to parents.
We were asked to buy hand sanitizers, hand washing soaps, a taped bucket on Friday. Parents were called in to come and clean and disinfect the rooms with those things that we bought, and we were asked to buy spray bottles to use for the sanitizers to buy, and the kids, each one is supposed to have at least three masks with the school logo and the student's name.
Observers say parents in urban areas may be able to afford barely the sanitary equipment as required, but the situation would be dire for students and parents in rural schools. In an interview with VOA, the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe says schools were reopened hastily without the needed preparations, creating dangerous conditions as shown by outbreaks. Takawa Firajo, the president of the union, speaks.
Confirms our earlier submission that merely conglomerating in schools in large numbers without testing was actually not a prudent measure. there was need for testing before conglomerating in schools. And even the so-called testing at gates is not necessarily testing for COVID, but basically temperature, and most of the thermometers are not even functional.
Joe says a broad intervention is needed to prevent a disaster. Obed Masaraure of the Agricultural Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe says the coronavirus is popping up around the country.
For the schools which are really monitoring learners, they are declaring that they have a lot of learners with symptoms. We have received reports from 74 schools across the country who confirmed that they have learners with worrying symptoms of COVID-19. But you should understand that in most schools, there's no monitoring taking place. As a result, it is difficult to ascertain the extent to which infections are spreading.
Masaraure and others say the piecemeal measures are being exacerbated by the dire state of the overcrowded public transport, commuter transport system. Reporting for VOA, Sadi Gondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
Public transport in Zimbabwe has been a highly contested area since the government grounded all private operators at the beginning of the pandemic and moved in to create a monopoly through its bus company. Running battles have been the order of the day between authorities and privately owned vehicles operating illegally. Reporter Kudzai Zanawashi has the details.
Authorities have long defended the monopoly by its bus company, Zimbabwe United Passenger Company, or ZUPCO, as its way of bringing sanity and order into city streets. The latest is that authorities have launched an operation against private public transport operators, and commuters will be fined about $15 for using them. Critics say it's unfair to punish hard-pressed workers for opting for quicker and readily available means of transport. Andrew Chibanda, the acting spokesperson for the Passengers Association of Zimbabwe, spoke to VOA about the crackdown.
We are against the current blitz by the police force on passengers who are found on board private vehicles and in other vehicles which are not registered under ZUPCO. And we are saying the acts of the police are not legal as they violate our constitutional right.
He says Zimbabwe's transport system has its shortcomings.
We don't have a viable transport system in Zimbabwe. ZUPCO project, it came as a half-baked project which is doomed to fall. The mobility of people is compelling the people to resort to transport which is readily available and which take them to where they want in time and conveniently.
Milton Busha is an informal trader who commutes to the Central Business District every morning. He says the new operation has affected people's daily routine.
This current blitz is making it hard to get to work. We're actually having to wake up at like 6 o'clock, 6:30, so that we can actually just be in town by 9 o'clock when we start working. So it's really, really hard for people. And worse, with the back to school happening, it's affecting business, it's affecting everything. And the ZUPCO buses, they're not even enough to actually to cater for everyone else.
ZUPCO says it's doing its best to meet demand, and the government says it will continue to bring in more buses. Meanwhile, people have to stand in queues for hours to go home after work. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinavashi from Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
Voice of America's global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the